Testing, testing, testing. Can you hear me? This is Audible Autism.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Audible Autism. Interesting questions and interesting facts. I say another because statistically the majority of the people listening to this will already have heard a later episode and decided to listen to all of the episodes in order from the beginning. We approve! In this episode, episode 0, we'll be covering some basic ground. There's an introduction to me and my co-host Odai, an introduction to the podcast, and a series of position statements that will cover our assumptions about autism, autistic culture, and autistic life that underpin the structure and content of this podcast. So, a basic introduction to me and Odai. I'll go first. My name is Sarah McCulloch. I'm 28 years old. I was born and live in London, and I am autistic. I have a degree in theology from the University of Manchester and a master's degree in occupational therapy. I am a practicing occupational therapist in mental health with the intention of eventually working exclusively with autistic adults. I'm also an ordained interfaith minister and spiritual counsellor. In my spare time, I like reading, I post memes to Facebook, and I follow my special interests, which vary from year to year. That's the summary, and I'm sure you'll hear a lot about me in subsequent episodes, if we make them, but I'll zoom in and give a little bit more detail on my autism. I didn't regress at 2, like many people, but I didn't speak until I was 3, and I didn't learn to write at all until my mum had me assessed by the Dyslexia Institute and diagnosed as dyslexic at the age of 7. I went to Dyslexic Saturday School and learned to write at 9. I was reassessed by my school at 12 and told that actually I had dyspraxia and dyslexia didn't apply to me. At 16, in a dispute with my school over my admission to my sixth form, I had a private OT assessment to confirm my dyspraxia, and written in this report was a suggestion that I might also have semantic pragmatic disorder, a communication disorder that was related to the autistic spectrum and I don't believe exists anymore. That didn't really mean anything to me at the time, but I used it to explain some stuff that I was experiencing. At 18, I left home and embarked on a gap year at the University of Bradford, where a chance conversation with a drunk friend about a communication fail in which I'd accidentally insulted him caused a major light bulb moment in my life, and I realised that what autism meant and what it meant for me. I was autistic. I was 19 years old. So I went to my doctor and asked to be assessed for autism. That 12-word sentence will cover for now a 4-year period in which I was shunted from clinic to clinic, who didn't know what I was asking them to do, until my family finally went private and I was diagnosed at the age of 23 with Asperger's syndrome, attention deficit disorder, and a childhood speech impediment. I left that clinic justified in my own self-diagnosis and mightily pissed off at the struggle I had had. At the time, my special interest that took up all of my time, which was drug law reform, was something that I was starting to drift out of after, I think, 4 or 5 years. And so I committed myself to nothing less than the complete re-evaluation of autism, the way we view autistic people, and the way that public policy treats us. I embarked on my MSc in OT in 2013 in pursuit of that goal, and I will not stop until all my people are free. And Odai, your turn.
Okay, thanks. My name's Odai, and I suppose with my story, I'd like to start at the end, where I'm currently 23 years old, out looking for work, and have been diagnosed with Asperger's, dyslexia, and dyspraxia. My story starts 6 years ago, back in sixth form when I was 17. I'd gone through a first year where the grades I had were less than stellar, wasn't even sure I would make it through to first year when a specialist who was outside my sixth form came through, wanted to arrange a one-to-one meeting with me. He was in a secondary school, which wasn't far from where I'm studying, and I don't really remember any of the questions that he asked me from then, but I remember the next day coming after that session and meeting him and the staff, and they were saying that there were signs I might have had Asperger's. At the time, I remember friends of mine joking and saying that I had it, but I half took it on the chin and half took it as a possibility. But when I found out, it made the previous 17 years of my life make sense, and how often I'd felt lost, frustrated, and also continuously let down by the services and basically the school system as a whole, really. In a way, learning about it was both a relief for me and also a relief for my mother, who at the time, even as far back as primary, went and asked people if there was any way that they could help or assist me or make me get better, particularly in my handwriting. But the only answers they really gave back were it was down to a perceived lack of effort, and if I just put more in and if I worked harder, there'd be some improvement. Once that was set in, I was given a small laptop to make notes on, one-to-one sessions with a mentor, and certain exams like in maths or something or the other, where I wasn't either in an exam hall with three or four other people, or I was just by myself with an invigilator. It was awkward to get used to in some ways, and I resisted sometimes even not going to those sessions because I'd never had that kind of help before. And in a way, it was sort of stubbornness of I wasn't sure how to use it. And because I was so used to having to fend for myself for so long, I kind of was adverse to it. After that, uni was slightly better because I had it from the get-go. But sometimes it ended up with me having to see mentors who were assigned to me all, like, coming in all week rather than just the 3 days I had lessons to come into. And it was particularly worse in my final year where I ended up getting sick. And as a result, I was spent the rest of the year playing catch-up rather than deciding to go back and sort it out. In hindsight, it's, you know, looking back, they say hindsight is 20/20, but it happens to the best of us. How I met Sarah was interesting in that I was going to the Resources for Autism group all the way down in Finchley, and somebody brought up AS Mentoring, which is a specialist group, and their whole thing is to try and help people to get into work and assist them through trying to better their skills in terms of how to sell out a CV in the job market, CV, and look for specific places in the job market there. And coincidentally enough, it was her first day as a member of the team as well. Without her, I probably wouldn't have gotten a decent-looking CV together, apps to guide me with certain things like my sense of direction, where I needed to be, and just general other things where, after I graduated, I wouldn't have had any clue to figure out what to do. And it was only through this group being pointed out to me, I probably never would have figured out in the first place. She had to go for study purposes to Jerusalem, but we still sort of kept in contact after that. As far as work went, I worked in a football stadium before, White Hart Lane, if any of you are Tottenham fans here. But even then, I don't exactly consider that environment, nor the people who are running it, to be considerate. And if they were, it sure didn't feel that way. Tough job, no breaks, constantly on your feet most of the time. Usually the last to get out of the building, and most of the time I remember match days just sitting down and my body aching and wondering what was even the point of me working here in the first place. Best way I can describe my current situation now is that it's similar to where I was in the middle of the sixth form, the only difference being I now have the awareness of what I have now, which felt like the clouds parted for me and was something of a relief. But at the same time, it's given me a whole new host of problems in my midst, which I feel like I'm kicking at doors to try and get a bit of. And I must apologise that compared to Sarah, I've probably come off like a dark cloud pelting acid rain at the listeners, but I'm excited to be part of this and to contribute to something bigger in a way.
So the origins of what originally prompted me to think of running an autistic podcast are now lost to time. Specifically, I lost all of my notes on the topic. So when I came back to it, I was left with a name, Audible Autism, and the theme tune, which has a very funny backstory that you'll hear about another time. But as I was doing my market research, at the time I decided that it would be a good idea to record this, there was not a single autism-themed podcast available in iTunes that was run by people with autism. There were parents, there were experts. Where were our voices?
The subtitle of this and really the mission statement of this podcast is Interesting Questions and Interesting Facts. And what we mean by this is that we want this podcast to be interesting to people with and without autism, and its content there otherwise to cover autistic subjects and subjects that are interesting to autistic people. We want to deliberately note the double entendre in Sarah's choice of the title, which means that whether we are discussing autism or watchmaking, you are hearing autism. Whether we say it's an autistic opinion, and it always will be. We don't want this to be prescriptive about the content on of Audible Autism, because that would be unhelpful to an idea that's organic and developing through interaction with its listeners. But there are certain perspectives or position statements, if you will, from this podcast, and we operate. We name each one and then explain a little bit about it. Position one we would like to say in our statement is, autism is an ordinary variant of human neurology and is not an illness, a disorder, or even a condition. My generation of Aspies have inherited a very volatile conversation in the field of autism. 70 years ago, Cannell was accusing refrigerator mothers of producing autistic kids by not hugging them enough. Then we moved on to childhood schizophrenia, then the triad of impairment. Now there's a dyad of impairments. To be recognised as autistics, you still have to be diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder. There's been Asperger's, high-functional autism, classical autism, semantic pragmatic disorder, and pervasive development disorder not otherwise specified. Now we're on the single happy band of those on the autistic spectrum. Nothing even to begin to contemplate the impact that such discussions have had on the well-being and happiness of countless autistic people labelled as improperly raised, or impaired, or disordered, and consider a new possibility. The autistic people have existed for several thousands of years, that we're normal, and that many of the aspects of our personalities that are currently pathologized are accepted and just managed by neurotypical people as part of an ordinary everyday life. Anxiety, not knowing where you stand with people, an aversion to cooking, fixed dress habits, sounds familiar? Autism is about the way my brain processes and filters information, and the way I subsequently understand and interact with the world. That's it. Nothing gone wrong. There's not some standard of human being that I'm failing to achieve. I cannot be fixed and cured or trained to be neurotypical. See me for who I am and not for who you think I should be.
Position statement 2. Autism is autism is autism, and we are one people. Now, I can talk about how great and ordinary and normal autism is, but I can talk. Up to a third of autistic people don't. A third have learning disabilities, maybe a fifth have epilepsy. Many have profound and multiple coexisting conditions that are painful, intolerable, and have few upsides. I don't pretend that that's not the case, and neither does Odo. But saying that autism is a disorder because some autistic people have learning disabilities or medical conditions is like someone going to a doctor with period pain and being told that their diagnosis is that they're a woman. It's a potential thing that happens to certain women, but it doesn't mean there's anything inherently flawed about being a woman. Or rather, that's what we think now. We used to believe in Western society that period pain did indicate the inferiority of women, and then most of us realised how stupid that was. I firmly believe that we will one day regard our attitude towards autism in the same way. Let's start now. There are some people in our community who want to create a separation between aspergic people and autistic people, with the idea being that aspergic people have been blessed with intelligence and insight and independence from emotions and sensory whims, and our autistic siblings haven't. We reject this. We reject this from reality, in which the overlap between what one might call the strengths and weaknesses of autism can be surprisingly broad, even within the same person. We reject this from the potential of the future, in which a changing society that accepts, for example, that one does not have to speak in order to be heard, means that what we consider to be incapability now may well not be, with improved interventions and attitudes. And we reject this from morality. To my aspergic siblings, I say this. We don't know exactly what causes autism and why it manifests in one person as a love of strong colours and in another as a hatred of them, but the same combination of genes and hormones and whatever factors that gave you the skills to code like a fiend meant that other people grew up in wheelchairs. And we are the only people who really know how they feel. And they are the only people who can communicate with us in a language that we instinctively understand and never had to learn. There is no them and us. There is one autistic community, and we are responsible for each other. We are not leaving anyone behind. Position statement 3. Because of the nature of autism, a cure is unlikely, highly undesirable, and all resources currently being put towards a cure should be redirected elsewhere. With the current nascent state of neurological research, we have, at best, a bunch of conflicting theories as to what results in some people being autistic and others not, and at worst, a bunch of conflicting prejudices. I don't want to settle on any particular or potential cause of autism until the science is done. What is clear, though, is that autism as a thing is fundamentally located in the brain. My brain's neurological patterns function in a manner that exists within a range that my fellow Aspies also inhabit, and which is different to the range of the neurotypical brain. What this means is that it is very unlikely that I can have my autism removed by taking a medication, having surgery, being subjected to gene therapy, or becoming gluten-free. It is very likely that being autistic, like being gay or musical, is not something that you can cure or substantially modify without doing serious damage to the well-being of the person you are trying to change. Autism suffuses my being. It affects the way I speak to people, the way I react to light, the way I decide how to dress. Autism is the reason that I shout at people who don't finish their sentences and why I use words like suffuse. It's part of who I am. If you remove the autism, you remove the very core of what it means to be me. It cannot be done without destroying me. There is nonetheless hundreds of millions being poured into a search for a cure. That is hundreds of millions that are not being spent on creating and developing technologies and services that would benefit autistic people. Technologies like discrete, cool-looking, alternative communication devices that operate through thought or vocal cord vibrations so that non-verbal people can have the choice to communicate via speech-generating devices or to type on a keyboard. Services like regular mentoring for autistic people trying to find their way through a scary world. Community care packages to enable autistic people who have profound learning disabilities to enjoy life to the full. Education programs to ensure that autistic children are given the education that they need and they are not excluded or left behind at school. These are the things that we need. We do not need a cure. The obsession of people who are not autistic to fund and find one both stigmatizes us as people who are ill and excludes us from taking up our rightful place in society. It is not right, and it must end.
Position statement 4. Autism is not what disables us. We live in a society that disables us. If you're wearing glasses, take them off. You cannot see properly. You have a visual impairment. For most of human history and much of today, the state of your sight now is what people just had to put up with and try to get on with in their lives. Glasses were invented 800 years ago in Italy, but relatively few people call someone who wears glasses disabled. The use of glasses and contact lenses to correct poor eyesight so that I can see, as well as those of you who do not wear glasses, is so widespread, so normalised, that no one considers that from another perspective. Glasses are a piece of specialist equipment to help people meet the expectations of a society that demands everyone should be able to read, fixes the size and colours of print and signage to a specific range of sight ability that is considered normal, and expects everyone who doesn't fit that range to get glasses if they want to function within that society. We've moved on considerably from stigmatizing people for wearing glasses or making it difficult to obtain them. A civil society funds glasses for those who cannot afford them. Once it was recognized that glasses were an essential part of physical appearance of a person who wore them, people started to develop different types of glasses that fitted people's faces, face types, and looked aesthetically pleasing to them. Sarah's, at least, looks fantastic. My point is, when it comes to visual impairment short of legal blindness, our society just deals with it. We make no fuss about it. Some people wear glasses and we get over it. By contrast, our attitude towards autistic traits that are akin to mild visual impairments in many countries are simply medieval. The worst forms of applied behavioural analysis, a behavioural modification method that passes for autistic education for many people, a little different from beating someone for using their left hand instead of their right. I believe instead that we should start from the perspective of who autistic people are and not who you would like us to have been seen as. If it is a virtually diagnostic criterion that autistic children speak later than neurotypical children, if it is well known that autistic people reach puberty at the same age as their neurotypical peers but lag behind emotionally by several years, if we can all observe that it's harder and less instinctive for autistic people to develop social skills that come naturally to neurotypical people, if we know these things to be true, perhaps instead of talking about autistic people missing their developmental milestones, we should instead consider that autistic people's developmental milestones are simply different from neurotypical ones. What would a society look like that considered autistic emotional maturity to be 21 instead of 18? Would parents panic if they knew their autistic children were still likely to talk but might hold off until the age of 5? Would autistic people seem so helpless and disabled then? Holding us to the standards of neurotypical society sets us up to fail every time, because we are not neurotypical and we can never be. But there's things that can be done that can carve out space for autistic people within neurotypical society in ways that are simple, cost-effective, and most of all accepting. Let us wear glasses, metaphorically speaking, and see what we can do.
Position statement 5. Being autistic does not give us the right to be a dick or to reject personal development. Every minority surrounded by a majority has to make decisions about to what extent they want to separate or assimilate to that majority. Every autistic person has to decide for themselves to what extent they are willing to compromise their identity or their behaviour in order to fit in with that majority. That also means that you are then responsible for the consequences of those choices. What I mean by this is, if I become aware that I engage in a behaviour that is alienating to other people, whether they are autistic or neurotypical, I have to choose to what extent I'm willing to change that behaviour in order to be accepted by them. For example, I am a very blunt and plain-speaking person. I used to find it very difficult to make friends because I could be overly aggressive about pushing my views on other people and become enraged when they didn't do or think what I wanted. And eventually I realised that that was a serious problem that was alienating people from me, people who I wanted to be closer to. So I started paying attention to how people behave towards other people. I taught myself empathy and how other people might react to certain things that I said or did. I taught myself phrases like, perhaps, but what about? And I'm not sure that added an element of uncertainty to my speech that made my comments seem less forthright. I made sure that I randomly told people things that I liked about them instead of just being critical when they said things that I didn't agree with. I found softer, subtler ways that didn't hide my honest answers to questions like, do I look fat in this? Or do you think I'm a horrible person? That didn't prevent me from expressing my opinions, but made them more palatable to hear. None of that process was easy, but so far as I can tell, it worked. I have meaningful relationships with people that I'm not related to who regularly say things like, I love you, and I think you're amazing, all of which I take as a good sign. I'm still a very blunt and plain-speaking person. I still sometimes insult people by accident. But generally speaking, I've turned my way of speaking into a thing about me that's cool. You know where you stand with me. I won't back down from an argument, but I'll have dinner with you afterwards, and I'll be interesting and enthusiastic and thought-provoking. Most people forgive me for accidentally being a dick, and for the people who don't, well, they can get lost. I've made my choices, and I'm happy. But I could also have said, I'm autistic, this is how I do, and contented myself with not having close friends. And someone who does that might be happy that way, and I know that there are definitely some autistic people who view other people as an inconvenience coming in between them and their special interests. I think that's a legitimate way of being autistic too. But if you say, I'm autistic, this is how I do, and then complain that no one will hang out with you or invite you to stuff because they're discriminating against you, then, frankly, you have to own that behaviour. No one is obliged to associate with you if you don't leave them feeling better than when you walked into the room. Being autistic is not an excuse for not trying. And that concludes our position statements for this podcast.
Mm-hmm. A word on language, though. We do not, as far as we've mentioned, recognise Asperger's syndrome as a thing in itself. We are all autistic as far as we're concerned. However, the term Aspie is a common use as an informal and even an affectionate way of referring to each other, and we are happy to use that word despite its origins. On the people with autism or autistic person debate, we'll be frank, we don't care and we don't think it matters. What matters is that you're talking about us.
That brings us to the end of episode 0 of Audible Autism. Thank you very much to me and Odai as co-hosts. Thank you very much to Ellie, who will be on in a subsequent episode, for her enthusiastic support for the idea. And thank you very much for listening. And please feel free to contact us at team@audibleautism.com with your comments, suggestions, and ideas for future episodes. Until next time.
Thank you.